So a lot of what was shared and a lot of what's going on around us in the external environment is just so well mirrored in this stage of the story. So I just so to bring it back and your own illustrations, what's been described here will drop in, I'm sure. So the story here is about building up at the sensory level what is able to accommodate what is higher. So the sensory level is in disorder. That's what this is about. And this is the means by which it is reordered into a form that can hold ultimately Joseph. But it talks here about the new natural. So what is the new natural? And this is Pharaoh. This is what he represents. And so what we're told with regard to the previous chapter was that the internal of the natural has sort of been sorted out. And now we're dealing with the external of the natural, which needs sorting out. And Pharaoh is that new natural and also is called Fax. So that's what makes up this new natural of Fax. So the question then is, what has changed? And this has to do with how we are able to engage with the text, with the word. So what these facts are, they have gone from being natural facts to spiritual facts. That's the change that's happened. So what do we mean by that? Well, it's a shift from the sensory aspect of the word, which is the sense of the letter, which has to do with person, place, time, and space, so the historicals. And the historicals have been removed, and what you are left with are spiritual facts once those historicals are moved, or the focus has gone on more interior things. That's what it means. So the things of the word are being read more interiorly, but the way that the senses are taking hold of things, as so taking an example of a two-week session, if you like, we enter into the text and the sensory things get hold of us, the historicals, and they bind up our thinking. But we know that what we are reading is actually about our states, is about states of mind, not about history. The history is merely a vessel by which we can access more and discriminate our interior states. But there is still an issue with the way that information from the word is being received. So we get bound up and we can't see beyond the letter. So we're obscure. We know that. And so what happens is that that sensory has to be laid aside. Now, what's interesting about that is that it is placed under the, and this is the, this is Eliot. Potts is slightly different, but it pretty much means the same thing. But what Eliot says is that the baker and the cupbearer, who represent those that level of the sensory, one baker to do with those things of the will and the cupbearer to do with the things of the understanding. So what it says is that, and I'm just reading from 5073, just the summary that's given there. So of the house of the chief of the attendants means the things that are first and foremost in explanations. So sensory things have to become subject to first principles. If they're not, they run havoc because we believe the appearances of the senses. So these first principles are the principles of doctrine, which tell us what is actually real, as opposed to what our senses tell us is real. And this is the process whereby these things have to be sorted out. They have to be held at bay. So Pharaoh, and basically throwing these elements into binding them in the prison house, is really about when things are rising out of the word and when it's not clear what they are, It's about putting on hold any interpretation and going back to first principles in order to then take a look at these things. That's the idea. And in the prison house, they then become subject to Joseph. So Joseph, you know, is explained as being the celestial of the spiritual from the rational in the natural, right? So you get this long explanation. Like, you know, these are just, okay, they're just terms. In basic terms, though, for us, if you like, when we talk about rational things, we're talking about those, you know, the goods and truths that have been elevated and do form a level within us that allows light to come in, heavenly light to come in. And those things are only elevated through practice. So it's what has been practiced. That's what Joseph represents, the celestial element, the practice element, or the good that comes from the practice of rational truths, if you like. It's that kind of idea that's captured there. And it's we know that if you look at things that you have gained from your practice and things that you have been taught and only sit in you as a, you know, as historical faith, sometimes these things don't line up, you know. So there is an experiential way of knowing, and there is a intellectual way of knowing. And the experiential and the intellectual often are, you know, can be in conflict with one another. So, but it's not until truths actually become living in us through practice that we begin to see the truth that relates to practice, as opposed to doctrinal structures that are cold and intellectual and of the memory. The livingness of it is when we can actually see how it applies to life. And this is not talking about external life, the life out in the world. We know what we have to do out there. It's how you apply these things to the life of the mind. That's where it really counts, because that is where the changes have to take place. So the reason the baker ultimately loses his head, right? So the baker can't serve. And the reason the baker can't serve, so a good example that sort of come out of our external circumstance, the baker is that which responds out of fear, if you like, or instinct, the instinctual response to preserve oneself. So when you walk into the supermarket and there's no toilet paper left on the shelves or no hand sanitizer left on the shelves, there's an example of the baker, right? It's just like everyone's out to protect themselves. The cupbearer is, you know, I just find this fascinating, because what's, I'm sure it's similar for everyone in the different parts of the world, but, you know, we're confined, basically. We've been put in prison, actually physically put in the prison, house arrest, if you like, in a sense. So, and then we keep getting these messages, you know, through the media and what have you, about how to handle things in terms of the management of the virus. This is, you know, this is what's illustrated here as well, you know, that the sensory belonging to the understanding can be instructed. And that's why we get this list, you know, I don't know how many are there, 13 or something. Anyway, you get this list of fallacies of the senses. They can be corrected when they're understood from doctrinal principles. But the baker is always going to respond out of fear and the need to protect itself and all of that sort of stuff. And so that baker cannot serve the new natural, which is Pharaoh. And then we have the point that essentially the process takes time, that there has to be all these changes of state. So, you know, ultimately, the cupbearer goes back, he's elevated, you know, so he is corrected, he serves now. So the historicals of the word now serve interior things. They are read differently. Same text, but they're understood differently. And so they serve Pharaoh, the new natural. And that sensory has to be put in place before Joseph can be released, because there has to be something that can, through correspondence, accommodate what is of the Lord all the way down to the most external part of the sensory. And until those corresponding elements are in place, the Lord can't be present there in terms of our awareness of him ruling over our life. I mean, the Lord is always present. He's omnipresent. But this is talking about our capacity to actually be in the freedom and peace of that heavenly life, right down to the most exterior levels of our life, of our mind. With regard to temptation, which came up, because this is what this is all about, think of it like this: like, temptation is the process. It's not like there's temptation and there isn't temptation. Temptation is the process. There is no regeneration without temptation, because we are attached to the appearances of the senses as something real. We believe them. And so to extract us from that, you can't be extracted from it without a struggle. Okay, there's no other way, because it has to be our choice in that sense. Like, we have to want to move towards more interior things. We have to do that in freedom, and the capacity to do it is from the Lord, but it is as of ourselves. And as we act on what the Word offers us, in this work at least, on a 2-week rotation, then if we're acting on what we're given, changes and shifts are occurring in terms of our mental structures, our beliefs, our attitudes, these things. And that is incremental for most of the time. That's why it takes many days, many different states to actually come to see that change has occurred. There's definitely times when there are major shifts and major collapses of things. But in general terms, it's an incremental shift. And it's like you get to a tipping point, and then suddenly there's a reorganization that has to occur, that an inversion has to occur. So, that was the other thing here. It talked about, gave a definition of sin. I don't know if anyone picked it up, but so it's in 5076. So everyone acts contrary to that order whose truth is not grounded in good. So consequently, whose truth or else falsity is grounded in evil. Nothing else than this is meant by sin. So when our truth is not grounded in good, that really struck me as being a profound statement. Because to be in the order of life that the Lord has ordained for human beings is to be in good, to be in the truths and the goods that are of a living kind, not just an intellectual kind. That's really what this is about. It's so sin and evil are loaded terms if they are only understood morally. They have to be understood spiritually as well, and that is a different thing. And anything that is in an inverted order, so if truth is in the first place, that becomes a state of sin at the point where that truth has to give way and come under what is good. So we move through these states continually over the course of our lives, and it's just broadening our understanding of what these sort of terms actually mean from a practice perspective.